Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 136. I'm recording it on Wednesday, May 6th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 16. That's the high side of fair value. Stocks, purchased at today's prices, offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of this selection is Aftermath. Spooky music for a spooky lie detector podcast theme. The title of the podcast is If Scott Burns Took a Lie Detector Test. This is sort of a playful podcast with with some serious thoughts behind it, hopefully. The idea of this is Scott Burns is a columnist at the Dallas Morning News. I believe he may be retired now, but he still writes there occasionally. And he still does investment advising. And Scott is, Scott's a very good columnist, one of my favorites. And for years, he's promoted the safe withdrawal rate, the old school safe withdrawal rate research. And I was the person who discovered the errors, the analytical errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies that, in all likelihood, are going to cause millions of busted retirements in days to come. And Scott and I had I wrote Scott some years back, quite a few years back now, and told him about our work in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities. And Scott and I engaged in some very good email correspondence that's posted at the blog. I believe it's at the old blog, the Financial Freedom blog, but you can reach that material at the A Rich Life blog at the website. It's in archives. You have to look for the old archives. There's two sets of archives, the archives of the existing blog and the archives of the old blog. And there were some very good back and forth emails. And Scott took a strange position on the safe withdrawal rate question. He said that he thought I had added a important new layer of understanding to the safe withdrawal rate question. I argued that you need to look at the valuation level that applies on the day the retirement begins to know whether a retirement is safe or not, since the academic research has been showing for close to 30 years now that valuations affect long-term returns. So the valuation level obviously affects the return you obtain. And if you get lower returns, this is so stupid that I have to go through this on every podcast. I feel like I'm talking to, wee tiny children or something. I keep repeating the sky is blue and two is four, But in the event, I don't mean to insult you, my listener. The problem is our knowledge of investing is primitive today because all of the investing, not all, but 90% of the investing advice we've heard for the past 30 years is influenced by this idiotic efficient market theory and this idiotic passive investing model. And so we've gotten all the most basic questions wrong. And, so I have to always explain that, Rob Bennett is so controversial. He thinks common sense might work in investing. So I don't mean to insult you, but I'm laughing because it's just so, it really is idiotic. I mean, it's the first 50 times you have to do it, you sort of accept it. But after, I've been doing this for 7 years, 24/7. And after a while, it gets to you at times. But anyway, the old school studies don't count valuations. The research has been showing for 3 decades that valuations affect the result. So Rob Bennett, troublemaker that he is, came along and said, hey, since all the numbers are wrong, and since people use these studies to plan their retirements and they're going to suffer busted retirements, what if we reported the numbers accurately? Well, what do you think, guys? Now, Scott didn't think that was such a hot idea. He said, I added a new layer to our understanding of the safe withdrawal rate issue, but it would be catastrophically unproductive to tell people the accurate numbers. Oh, if we tell people accurate numbers, they'll know that the experts got it wrong. Oh, they'll have to say they were sorry, made a mistake. Whoa. So, that's the story. That's... I can't make this. I could not make this stuff up if I tried. Telling you the true story, friends and neighbors. So that's where Scott stands. And the purpose here is not to focus on Scott Burns. Scott Burns, I'm just using as an example. Scott came out with a column not too long ago. My friend Schroeder at the Goon Central Board brought it to my attention. And the column said, it was a good column. I linked to it at the Today's Passion feature at my website. The column said that retirees are frightened today because, you know, they're in the middle of suffering these busted retirements. It hasn't quite happened yet. They haven't all run out of money yet, but it's happening as we speak. It's happening in real time. And Scott said, well, it's not really so bad because the drop in prices, which, of course, was huge, a huge drop in price, since valuations affect long-term returns, which is true, I didn't find that out. As Scott pointed out, people have known this for 30 years. This is old news. Since valuations affect long-term returns, we've had a huge drop in valuations, and that means that future returns are now better than what they were before the crash, and that is 100% correct. Therefore, the retirees aren't in as bad shape as, well, it wouldn't be right to say they're not in bad shape. They're in horrible, horrible shape. Millions of them are going to suffer busted retirements if stocks perform in the future anything at all as they always have in the past. But they're not really in that much worse shape than they were before the crash. Now, Scott didn't say it quite that way. The way he said it was, I mean, you'll have to read his column. I'm sure you can Google it and find it. Or, you know, as I say, I mentioned it in the Today's Passion feature. But, what Scott said is the crash hasn't hurt them as much as they think it has. And that's true. Take that fact in isolation. It's true. My calculators show the same thing. But the difference is that Scott wasn't warning them before the crash that they were going to suffer busted retirements. He was just saying, oh, use the old school numbers. You know, they're wildly off the mark. But hey, you know, that's what the experts say. So can't question those experts. And I was telling them, you know, the odds were, I mean, people that retired at the top of the bubble using the old school safe withdrawal rate studies have only a 30% chance of their retirements not failing. So extreme risk, the highest risk imaginable. And now it may still, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but it may be that today it's you know, it's still somewhere around, maybe it's down to 25, you know, it went from 30% to 25, so it's, or 20, you know. So maybe now they have a 20% chance of their retirement surviving. So it's not that much worse. Scott's point is well taken. Not that much worse. But it was horrible before. That's the part he leaves out. Anyway, I debated, I considered sending him an email congratulating him on the column, because the column does make a very important point. He's showing the importance of valuations in that column. But then I would make the follow-up point that, hey, you know, in order to really make the case about valuations, we can't pretend that valuations only matter, to make things sound better than they are. But we also need to point out that valuations lower returns. And, you know, the insane valuations that applied before the price crash were hurting people. Why don't we tell them that, too? In other words, we've got to tell it both ways. Scott was sort of following the Michael Kitsis approach of, I call it old school research. They point out that valuations make things better when they go down, but then they ignore the fact that valuations make things worse when they go up. They're one step ahead of the passives, but they're not really making logical sense. And I debate whether I should send that email or not, because I haven't written Scott in some time, so I don't think it would be pestering him. And it'd be great if we could get a dialogue going. Maybe the price crash has gotten him, you know, a little shaken up, and he's reexamining his thinking. And that would be great. But the downside is he was getting a little huffy in that last email where he said it was catastrophically unproductive to tell people the straight story. And, you know, there was a column recently by Jonathan Clements the old Wall Street Journal columnist where he said, I'm not apologizing. And my guess is that Scott is on that same wavelength. The passive advocates seem to, I don't think there's any conspiracy where they all get together and adopt a game plan, but I think it's a psychological thing. I think they're suffering from cognitive dissonance. They can't accept how wrong they got it, and they're struggling. And I thought it was, I did a podcast on the Jonathan Clements column, and I said something, I forget the exact title, something like, Jonathan Clements can't apologize, and that's bad news for all of us. And I think they're dealing with cognitive dissonance. And the fact that Jonathan was writing about it was a good sign. The fact that he put it out on the table meant he's feeling uneasy. He's thinking maybe he should apologize, even though he's concluding he shouldn't. That's an encouraging sign. And the same thing's probably true with Scott. He's looking at how valuations affect retirees. He's not willing to acknowledge that it would be a good idea to give people accurate numbers in their retirement studies. But he's sort of toying with the idea, and, you know, when the time comes where me sending an email will help him get to the next stage, I want to be there. And the question is just, you know, when is the appropriate time? But if I send too many emails, I feel he'll tune me out, so I don't want to overdo it. I think I'm not going to send it. I think I'm going to wait, and maybe when there's another big price crash, I think that might be the moment when Scott and Jonathan and John Bogle and William Bernstein and lots of others will be, you know, willing to open up to the idea of you know, reporting the numbers accurately and acknowledging the mistakes of the past 30 years. So Scott Burns was on my mind as a result of that column, and I'm always going through. I think the hardest question for people to deal with today is people know that passive investing hasn't worked. They get that. You know, that's clear. And I think people knew that passive investing didn't make sense even before the price crash. Even in the old days, people knew it didn't add up. If they perhaps didn't know it on the, they perhaps couldn't say it. They couldn't acknowledge it. But on some level of consciousness, they knew it. And I know that because I've seen the reaction on discussion boards when you bring up the inconsistencies, the logical inconsistencies. People get very fearful, very upset, very defensive. You don't get defensive if you don't know you're wrong. So it wasn't people, I've never, ever seen passive investing advocates respond with confidence to questioning of their claims. Never. Well, I don't want to say never. That guy, Oblivious Investor, did it. He did it. I wrote a guest blog at his blog, and he responded with a sense of humor. His comment was, oh, a guest blog saying that everything I say at my site is wrong. How could I say no? I thought that was perfect. That was the perfect response, and that wasn't defensive. And there have been a few others like that, so I shouldn't say never. But it's rare. It's rare. It's so rare that I remember the few times it's happened that a passive investing advocate could respond with good humor to being questioned about their dogmas. So the question that ordinary investors have, ordinary investors have always had doubts about this stuff. They've always known on some level of consciousness that it didn't make sense. They have generally deferred to the experts. Their thinking has been, I don't know investing. These other people get paid millions to know investing. They must know better than me. I'm not going to question them. So they went ahead and invested according to the experts. They've lost most of their retirement money, and they're feeling bad. And some are looking for something better. They're starting to ask questions. They're saying there must be something better. Others are sticking to their, you know, to their boots or whatever it is you stick to, sticking to their guns. You don't stick to your boots. I knew that didn't sound right. You stick to your guns. Others are saying, I mean, one guy, I was listening to an earlier podcast this morning, and it was so sad. I read this quote from this guy, and he clearly had lots of doubts about passive investing from reading his post, and then he said, but I'm sticking with it no matter what, because there's just, if I didn't stick with it, I couldn't invest at all. And I thought, what a sad thing to say. Why not move on to something that makes more sense? You know, rational investing, valuation-informed indexing. But he probably doesn't know about valuation-informed indexing because Mel Lindauer won't let him find out. Mel Lindauer is making sure that the people who are looking for something new and better, I think, are not able to find out about it. Boo! Boo! Mel! Boo! Let my people go, Mel. Let my people be free. So what I want to do in a somewhat playful way in this podcast is to, it's all hypothetical. None of this is real. It's all speculation. To say what I'm going to try, I have 52 questions, and I may not stick with those 52. I wanted to have a full deck of cards, so I went with 52. But I may ask some that are not listed here, and I may ignore some of these. I may not be able to read my writing on a good number of them, so I'll just have to skip them whether I want to or not. But what I'm going to try to do is go through 52 questions and give the answers that I think Scott Burns would give if he were taking a lie detector test. In other words, I'm going to say I believe that the experts are suffering from cognitive dissonance, that the valuations question haunts them. This is clear. They know that passive investing has weaknesses. They know. I have no doubt in my mind about that. I think you can prove that 1,000 times over. But I also believe that they don't let themselves think about things enough to realize how bad the problems are. And so I'm just going to give the answers I think Scott Burns would give if he were shooting 100% straight. I don't mean shooting 100% straight in that he resolved all these things. I'm saying what he truly believes, what he truly believes as of today. That's the idea here. Now, if Scott disagrees with the answers I give and wants to give his own answers, I would, of course, be thrilled to run his answers. I don't mean to speak for him. But what I'm trying to do here is give Rob Bennett's take on what Scott Burns thinks. I don't really know. I'm speculating. But this is what I think. And the purpose here is to explore what this cognitive dissonance thing means. Because the key to saving our economy is getting the experts to acknowledge they got it wrong. They made a mistake 30 years ago in thinking that valuations did not affect long-term returns. This has been proven many times over that they were wrong. There's a mountain of evidence. And they're not able to come to terms with that, or they have not been for three decades. And if the experts were to come around, we're off to the races, because we've got 30 years of wonderful research out there we can take advantage of in developing a new model, the model I call rational investing. So, you know, intellectually, there's really no problem in the investing field. The problem is emotion. The problem is, how do you admit you were wrong when you made a mistake so big that it caused the second biggest economic crisis in U.S. history? How do you ever come to admit you were wrong about something like that? Especially if you make a living as an investing expert, which means you have to assure people that you're never wrong about anything. You've got to act like a know-it-all, a big shot. So these are the 52 questions, and I'll give the answers that I think Scott Burns would answer if he were taking a lie detector test, and maybe a little commentary. Question one, do you believe in the efficient market theory? I think Scott Burns would say yes to that question if he were taking a lie detector test. I think the efficient market theory is nonsense, but I think Scott Burns believes it's true. Now, if I were to give a longer answer, I'd say the market is ultimately efficient. It's not efficient on the first day. That's what the efficient market theory says, that it's immediately efficient. But we all know that that's what the efficient market theory says. So that's implicit in the question. So I would answer that question no, but I think Scott Burns would answer it yes. Scott Burns knows that there are problems. That very article that he wrote about retirees, that recent article, implicit in that is a rejection of the efficient market theory. But I don't think he sees that. I think he blocks that from his mental processing. I think Scott would answer yes. Do you believe in the efficient market theory? Question two. Do you have total confidence in the efficient market theory? I think Scott would answer no. That's where, you give him a chance to acknowledge that there are problems. And I feel he could say no to that. I don't think he has a problem. And again, everything I say here does not apply only to Scott Burns. It applies to all advocates of passive investing. I'm just using him as an example. Do you have total confidence in the efficient market theory? I think he would say no. Now, just to add a commentary, if he were rational, no, none of us are fully rational. I mean no insult in saying that he's not fully rational. But what would a fully rational actor do if he believed in something but did not have total confidence in it? He would explore the weaknesses. He would learn what the strengths are of the theory and what the weaknesses are of the theory. He would reconfigure the theory until he had a theory that actually worked. And then he would write about what he came up with. And then he would go to the people who came up with the theory and say, here are your errors. He would advocate changes in the theory. I think to a large extent, that's what I've done. I say the efficient market theory is nonsense, but I also say that there are powerful insights that have been brought to us by the efficient market theory. And I basically say that the market is always in the process of becoming efficient. It is not efficient immediately, but it's always in the process of becoming efficient. But I think Scott would acknowledge he does not have total confidence, but the missing piece there is that he has not felt any need to explore the inconsistencies in the theory, and he has not felt any need to advocate for a reformulated theory. Question 3. Do you believe passive investing was responsible for the stock crash? I think Scott would say no if he was taking a lie detector test. I do not think he believes passive investing was responsible. I do. The goons at the Goon Central Board don't like it that I say that passive investing was responsible for the crash. Certainly lots of people have given other reasons for the crash, other explanations. And I think Scott believes those other explanations are satisfactory. I do not. I won't go into now why that's so, but the short version is we were all during the insane bull market fooling ourselves about how much money we really had. Stocks were valued at 3 times fair value, which means everybody who thought they had $100,000 in net worth, really only, if it was in stocks, really only had $35,000. And they were spending more than they could on all kinds of things, making all sorts of bad financial decisions because they thought they had so much more money than they really did. They were spending excessive amounts on housing and on cars and on vacations and just across the board. And when we returned to reality, the efficient market, the real efficient market, the efficient market that really does exist, ultimately reflects the reality principle and brought stock prices down to fair value again, and that caused us all to suffer this painful feeling of realizing we never had that money. It was all cotton candy. It was all pretend. And so now the middle class is afraid to spend because we have so much less than we thought we had, and we wasted so much because of the misleading information that was given to us in our portfolio statements for so many years. And now that we cut back spending in a consumer economy, that causes the entire economy to collapse. Question 4. Have you carefully thought through the causes of the stock crash? I think Scott Burns, if he were answering this question honestly, which is what he would have to do if there were a lie detector test, the answer is no. Scott believes, I think he truly believes, that factors other than passive investing were the primary factors causing the stock crash. But if you asked him, have you carefully thought this through? I think in honesty, he'd have to say no. He believes that these other factors were the primary factors because that's what others have said. Not because he personally has thought it through and come to that conclusion. Now, that's not a crime. We all trust others in coming to conclusions. I obviously do that, and we all do that. But I think if you're going to write a column on personal finance, the stock crash is such an important development that you have a responsibility to think it through independently and to check it out, not to go by what others are saying. That's what I believe. I believe Scott and all the others who advocate passive investing should be spending some time today thinking through the causes of the stock crash, not reading what others say. Thinking it through independently. Because if all you do is read what others say, all you're doing is repeating, the same, what was it Rob Arnott called passive investing the other day? The myth and urban legend. If all you do is read articles that other people are putting forward, you're just reinforcing the myth and urban legend. You need to think this through independently. What do you really believe was the cause of this crash? And think through the logic chain. Yourself, independently. That's the job of a journalist, in Rob Bennett's opinion. Question 5. Do you believe the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are flawed? I think Scott would answer yes if he were attached to a lie detector. The reason I say that is because you know, he told me in an email that he believes I added a, you know, important layer of understanding to our understanding of save withdrawal rates. Well, how could I add a layer if they were not flawed, if the old school studies were not flawed? So I think he does know that they were flawed. Do you believe, question six, do you believe that millions of middle-class Americans will suffer busted retirements as a result of the flaws in the old-school safe withdrawal studies? I think he would answer no. I think it's inconsistent. I think if you know the studies are flawed, again, you have an obligation to independently analyze how many are going to suffer busted retirements as a result of the flaws. But I think Scott Burns and many, many others, thousands of other experts, are scared to death to look at the numbers. They don't want to look at the numbers in the Retirement Risk Evaluator, because those numbers tell them how much damage they have done to how many people, and they don't want to know. It's painful. This is what cognitive dissonance is all about. Cognitive dissonance is a phenomenon. When human beings are faced with painful information, they block it out of their consciousness. And Scott Burns has devoted his life to helping people invest, save more effectively, and invest more effectively. And he's done a wonderful job for many, many years, 30 years, I don't know how many years, a long time. And to discover at this late date, you know, close to retirement, that he got all of his investing advice was wrong in a fundamental sense is painful. And I believe he's blocked that out. And that's why we're in an economic crisis today, not because Scott Burns did it, but because thousands have done it. But if all of these experts could bring themselves to working through, not just acknowledging the old school studies are flawed, but actually going in and doing the numbers and finding out how wrong the numbers are. I didn't know how wrong the numbers were when I put forward the post on May 13, 2002. I learned how wrong they were as a result of John Walter Russell's research. So I don't believe Scott knows how wrong they are. And I don't believe any of these others know how wrong they are. But I think they should be exploring it. This is why I want a national debate on the flaws in the passive investing model. The purpose of the national debate is to just inform ourselves. We can't make decisions on where to go until we're informed as to where we stand. And the people who most need to be informed are the experts, because they have a responsibility for helping all the rest of us become informed. If they're not informed, the rest of us don't have much of a chance. But they don't want to be informed. This is what people miss. People think, oh, of course you would want to be informed about stock investing. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want to know? You wouldn't want to know because you've devoted your whole life to telling a story that doesn't pan out. That's why people sincerely believed in the efficient market theory once upon a time. It didn't pan out. It didn't stand up to scrutiny. But they learned that it didn't stand up to scrutiny after they had already spent, you know, years exploring it and teaching it and learning about it and acknowledging that that fundamental building block, the efficient market theory, is the foundation of all conventional investing wisdom. Learning that the foundation block is wrong, it means starting over at the beginning. It means everything that followed from that is wrong. So we literally need to wipe the slate clean and go back to space A. It'll be a wonderful day when we do. There's all sorts of wonderful stuff to learn, the stuff that I explore at my site and in the podcast. But the hard part is acknowledging it. And you see, what the stage we're in now is you get these sort of surface acknowledgments. Oh yeah, there are some flaws, not perfect, but most of the experts do not want to look at how bad it is, how far off the numbers are. That's a shocker. It's a shocker. You know, it's sort of like, did you ever have a time when you stopped going on the scales? You know, maybe you used to weigh yourself every day. And you got, you know, I don't know, you got a little older and you started putting on a little weight and the scales were depressing. You know, you were only 5 pounds overweight, but you didn't like seeing it. And then you were 8 pounds overweight and you didn't want to know. And you got to a point where you just said, I don't think it's a good idea to check the scales. It depresses me to check the scales. And when I get depressed, I eat more. So I'm going to stop checking. and you go 6 months without checking, and now you're not 8 pounds overweight, you're 20 pounds overweight. And now you look at the scales one day and you say, oh, the scale must be broken. I'm not going to use the scale anymore. And then 6 months later, you're 30 pounds overweight. That's what we have. That's what's happened in among the investing experts. They started out being just a little off. A little off. Passive investing wasn't so horrible when we were at a PE 10 level of 10. It was wrong, but in practical terms, people weren't suffering busted retirements. We weren't having stock crashes. The economy wasn't in a crisis. But when they allowed the PE 10 level to get to 44 by telling people they didn't need to change their stock allocation when prices got insane, they created a monster. And the bigger the monster got, the less they want to know about their role in it, the less they want to calculate the numbers. Question 7, do you think you have anything to apologize for? This is the Jonathan Clements question. I think Scott would answer no. I think he would give the same answer as Jonathan Clements, and I think Jonathan was being sincere. I think Jonathan's conscience is bothering him, and I think Scott's conscience is bothering him enough that he's posing the question to himself, did I do something wrong? But there's a part of the brain that just slams the door shut and says, no, no, you did nothing wrong. This is responsible. This is good. This is prudent. John Bogle's a nice man. John Bogle's a good man. He advocates passive investing. This is good. Remember all those people that praised you before the crash? All the lives you helped? You're a good person. We all want to believe we're a good person. I'm not finding fault. I'm trying to explain to the best of my ability, to the extent I'm capable of doing so. It's not an easy thing to explain, and I could have some of these wrong. It's speculation. Question 8. Do you actively seek out challenging viewpoints? Well, the answer I put down when I was filling these out, I put down no. Now, I think Scott would have a hard time answering this one because you'd have to formulate the question carefully. I think he certainly seeks out challenging viewpoints on other questions other than passive investing. So maybe the way I should have worded it is, do you actively seek out challenges to passive investing? On that, I think he would answer no. In a general sense, I think he would probably answer yes. I think all journalists would answer yes. Do you seek out challenges to the conventional wisdom? I think all journalists would answer yes. But when it comes to whether they really do it on a particular question where they have a strong personal view, I'd say they do, many do not. All of us have a temptation to not do so. And if they had a lie detector attached and the thing was going to buzz if they didn't answer honestly, I think that on that one he would answer no. If the question was worded to include passive investing, you'd have to include language there saying, do you seek out challenges to the passive investing model? Question 9. Do you say everything you know about investing in your columns? I think Scott's answer would be no. I think there are things he knows that he does not report. I think he rationalizes. He comes up with reasons why that's okay, but I don't think he says all he knows. Part of the reason I say that is because a quote that came from Scott himself. Scott wrote a column about the New School research, the New School safe withdrawal rate research, and one of the statements in that column said, the reason you don't read about this in the media is, quote, it is information most people don't want to hear. I think that was Scott Burns' conscience speaking. His conscience was saying, I'm a journalist and I should be telling people what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. But I'm not. I'm afraid to point out that the old school studies are wrong, because if I point out that the old school studies are wrong, this whole house of cards comes tumbling to the ground. All passive investing comes tumbling to the ground. If the passive investing model has been giving people the wrong numbers for their retirement and those numbers haven't been corrected for years, this model is flawed to the core. And I don't want to be the one to say it. So I don't think he tells us everything he knows in his columns. Question 10, do you think it was right to ban Rob Bennett? Scott banned me, as I said. We had a long email correspondence, but Scott then started a, he has some kind of business, and I don't know exactly what it is. It's some kind of investment advisory business. I don't know the details. And he has a discussion board attached with that. And so he'll answer questions. It's a good way of promoting yourself. People get to ask questions for free, and then they decide if they want to hire you. But he wrote something about safe withdrawal rates there, and I jumped in and said, I'd like people to know about the New School research, and gave a link to the Retirement Risk Evaluator, the only accurate retirement planning tool on the internet that I am aware of, the only one that considers the effect of valuations that I am aware of. And one of the goons came on and attacked in an attempt to get that thread shut down, and Scott removed the thread. I forget if he removed the thread or banned me. I think he removed the thread, but it's possible he actually banned me. One or the other, but it's essentially the same thing. It's essentially saying if I report honestly on safe withdrawal rates, I will not, my posts will not appear. So that's essentially banning me. Do you think it was right to ban Rob Bennett? I think Scott would answer no. I think he knows that's wrong. I think his conscience bothers him. Question 11. Do you think it was necessary to ban Rob Bennett? I think that one he would answer yes. You know, do politicians ever do things they think are wrong? I think they do. I think sometimes people in positions of authority do things that they know are wrong, and they justify it. They say, if I were to allow Rob Bennett, it's going to cause passive investing to fail, and passive investing is good, and so I have to ban him, even though it's wrong. Even though as a journalist, I know it's wrong to ban accurate reporting on safe withdrawal rates. Question 12. Do you think most investors are highly emotional? I think Scott would answer yes. I think that most passive investing advocates, most passive investing advocates know, they don't know the full extent of the problems with passive investing, but they know there are problems. Now, there are some that don't. There are some that just, you know, probably are clueless. But the smart ones, the ones that I tend to read, know. They know there are problems, but they don't know the extent. And the way they justify in their minds not telling their readers is, they say, well, investors are highly emotional, the poor dears, and so we need to sort of spin things. We need to make it very, very simple. We need to say, oh, no need to change your allocation. Because if we let them know that they need to change their allocation when prices are insane, they might change their allocation in the wrong direction. They might not understand. In other words, if we tell them the risk of stocks is sky high today, you're going to lose all your retirement money, you must lower your stock allocation, the poor dears might think we meant to increase their stock allocation. These are the, you know, It's what I'm saying, preposterous. Of course, it's preposterous. It's a rationalization. But, you know, you have to look at it from the other standpoint. The other standpoint is Scott Burns doesn't get paid millions of dollars a year, but a lot of people in this field do get paid millions of dollars a year. And if at the top of the market they started telling people how dangerous stocks were, they wouldn't be getting paid $1 million a year much longer. So the pressure on the experts to toe the passive investing line was enormous. And that means the pressure to justify behavior that, in an objective sense, does not sound right, was huge. And I think the most popular rationalization I have heard is the poor dear argument. The idea, we have to protect you from yourselves. We have to protect you from ourselves, from yourselves. I remember I wrote a post at the Vanguard Diehards once in response to Larry Swedrow saying, the investor's prayer, dear Lord, please protect us from our protectors. These people, I think that they've persuaded themselves that they are protecting us. I believe that they've persuaded themselves. But I also think it's nonsense. What middle-class investors need to hear is the full truth. And we are emotional. That part of it's true. That's why they're capable of persuading themselves. Because anyone who has dealt with investors knows how emotional they are. And the experts know this better than anybody. They don't talk about it all that much because it seems insulting to say that your readers are you know, emotional basket cases. The truth is what a lot of the experts are doing is not in a mean way, but they're exploiting that emotion. Their whole pitch for their services is focused on resolving the emotional anxiety of their readers. Passive investing, that's really what it's all about. It's these formulas, and they claim science, and all these things are aimed at making emotional investors feel better about doing something dangerous, buying stocks when they're insanely overpriced. I think the proper way to deal with the emotion is to shoot straight. And then people can develop a genuine confidence that they understand. When people understand the basics, they can develop a genuine confidence that's lasting, that's not vulnerable to upset. Investors are highly emotional, but I think the causation is the other way around. It's passive investing that makes them emotional. Passive investing is a house of cards. It's a pile of logical inconsistencies, one piled on top of another. And anyone who's staking their retirement money on a pile of logical inconsistencies is going to be emotional about it. So the experts have caused our emotional vulnerability, and then they cite it as the rationalization for spinning the realities. Humans, what are you going to do? Do you believe, question 14, I'm sorry, I think I missed 13. Do you blame passive investing for that? Do you blame passive investing for the fact that investors are highly emotional? Scott would say no. I say yes. Scott would say no. Question 14, do you believe valuations affect long-term returns? Scott would say yes. He clearly said yes to that in his emails to me. So he acknowledges, you know, to me, the two sentences, valuations affect long-term returns, and passive investing has been disproven. Those two sentences are equivalent sentences. They're the same thing. It's just two different ways of saying the same thing. You know, if you were in a logic course, and I took logic in school, you could put an equal sign between them. All you have to do is sort of, you know, pull out the premises of the two statements, and they're identical. If valuations affect long-term returns, then the risk-reward ratio of investing in stocks is obviously different at different valuation levels. How could anyone dispute that? If the risk-reward ratio is different, your allocation should be different. It shouldn't be the same. You could have a discussion about how different it should be. That you could have different reasonable opinions on. But there can be no reasonable opinion that no change at all in allocation is needed when valuations change dramatically. That's the only way that could be true is if valuations had zero effect on long-term returns. And I know of no investing expert who says that valuations do not affect long-term returns. I don't know of one. Even at Goon Central, they'll acknowledge that valuations affect long-term returns. So Scott would answer yes to that one. Question 15, do you believe it is possible for an investor to profit from that reality? Do you believe it is possible for an investor to profit from that reality? Well, this is an interesting one. I put down yes. I scribbled down answers to these questions. Now, that's a funny one. If you went to the Goon Central board and you asked that question, as I said, everyone acknowledges valuations affect long-term returns. If you went to Goon Central, they would deny that it's possible for investors to profit from the fact that valuations... The position they take is, yes, valuations must affect long-term returns. That just seems so obvious that no one disputes it. But what they say, the passive investors, the advocates of passive investing say, well, it's true that valuations affect long-term returns, but there's no way to profit from it. Now, to me, that's crazy. If 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 it if valuations affect long-term returns, and we have 139 years of historical data showing that, how could we not be able to get some sort of strategy out of looking at that 139 years of record? As I say, you could have reasonable disputes about what the best strategy is. I have my thoughts. But there's certainly room for differences of opinion on that question, on the strategic question. But I don't see how anyone could argue that there's not some way to profit. There's got to be a way to profit. If this is a reality of stock investing, and it's been a reality for 140 years, and we've got records of 140 years, wouldn't the records reveal to us some good ideas on how to profit? It sure seems so to me. And of course, if you look at the data, it gives you all kinds of ideas. That's my whole website. But the goons, I think, sincerely believe there's no way to profit. Most of them, I think, sincerely believe that. They invest their money passively. I believe that, for the most part. But I think Scott knows that there's a way to profit. It's one of these questions where I think he knows it, but he doesn't want to know it. I think he believes that there's a way to profit. I think he has doubts as to how much confidence he has in that. In other words, I don't think he says he's 100% sure. I think he might say, well, he thinks there's a 60 or 70% chance that you could profit, that you could time the market effectively, that is. To profit from the fact that the value proposition changes is to time the market. So I think in his heart of hearts, Scott Burns believes there's a way to time the market effectively. But it's a very foggy understanding. He doesn't want to know. He blocks himself from thinking about it. He thinks it's dangerous to think about it. He doesn't want to go there. He thinks the average investor is too emotional to do it effectively. And so this is all clouded in mist and fog. But I think he would answer yes. Not entirely sure on that one. They're all speculation, but that one's a little more speculative than most. Question 16. Do you believe it is possible for most investors to profit from this reality? That one I would say no. Scott thinks no. He thinks some can and some can't. And because he wants to write for the average investor, he rationalizes saying that no one can on the thinking that that's a simplification. That keeps things simple. And I think he rationalizes it on the basis that the better informed investors will figure out for themselves how to profit from long-term timing. But that he doesn't need to tell. I think he's wrong. I think not telling investors that long-term timing works is the biggest mistake in the history of personal finance. It has caused the second biggest economic crisis in U.S. history, says Rob Bennett. But I don't think Scott Burns thinks that. And I don't think he wants to think it. I think he very much does not want to think it. Question 17. Do you believe investing advice is generally good? Today's investing advice is generally good. Yes. I think Scott would say yes. I certainly do not think that's true. I think today's investing advice is abysmally bad. But I think Scott genuinely believes it's good. And I think once upon a time I did. It's only by my experience during the Great State Withdrawal Rate debate that I've seen how bad it is. And I was forced, you know, virtually at gunpoint to learning this. You know, I didn't want to learn it. And Scott doesn't want to learn it any more than I did. And because he hasn't been through the experiences I have, I don't think he has any idea how much harm this has done to the typical middle-class investor. Question 18, are you proud of your contributions? I think he would answer yes, and I think rightfully so. I think he's done wonderful work. Question 19. Would you like to see more discussion of the flaws of the passive investing model? This is another one that I'm not totally sure about, but the answer I gave is yes. I think Scott and many, many others would like to see more discussion of the flaws of passive investing. I don't think he wants to be the one to get the ball started. I think a lot of people know that there's a problem, as I said before. And a lot of people would like to be freed up to say what they think and to explore the problems. But they don't want to be the one to get their heads cut off. They don't want to go first. I think, again, this is highly speculative. I don't know. I think the answer to that one is yes. I think Scott would like to see others come forward. And as more and more people came forward, he would feel comfortable coming forward himself. And then he would start learning, and then he would come forward with more. In other words, this is a ball that would start rolling, and it would snowball. But the really hard part is getting the snowball started. And who's going to be the one to bell the cat? Who's going to be the big-name expert that's going to come forward and say, I was wrong about something very important for a very long time and have done harm to very, very many people? Question 20, do you want to lead the effort? That one would be no. Question 21, do you see it as a big deal if this effort does not go forward? I think Scott would say no to that. I think it's a huge deal. I think it's the whole deal. I think it's everything. If we can't teach middle-class investors the ABCs of stock investing, it's unforgivable for us to tell them to invest in stocks to finance their retirements. We're either going to tell them the straight story, or we should tell them to get out of stocks altogether. And telling them to get out of stocks altogether would be irresponsible. So we've got to tell them the straight story. I think it's the whole deal. But I think Scott feels it would be good if this were publicly aired, but I don't think he sees it as life or death. He feels, well, you know, be nice. Be nice. You know, it's I don't think the intensity is there. Question 22. Do you think we will see another 50% price drop? I think Scott would say no. I think Scott would say that's unimaginable. I think he feels that we've fallen so far that another fall is almost unimaginable. If you look at the historical data, you see that we went to the price levels we went to this time four times in U.S. history, and every time before this, we fell to a P10 level half of where we are today. So the odds are we're going to see another 50% price drop. It's not a lock. You can't say because it happened three times, it's sure to happen a fourth. But you've got to say the odds favor it. There's never been a time we went to these price levels and did not go to P10 levels far lower than where we are today. So you've got to say the odds are. But I don't think Scott can imagine that. And again, I don't mean just Scott. I mean all passive investing advocates. Question 23. Do you think we have already fallen, prices have already fallen enough? Yes. I think Scott's answer to that would be yes. 24. Do you think many investors are angry today? Yes. I think that the experts have noted that their listeners, their readers are angry. I wish that would cause them to rethink their advice. I wish that they would be responsive to that anger. I think that they believe the anger is misplaced and inappropriate. I think they're wrong. I think the anger is totally appropriate. What I fear is that if people in positions of influence do not respond to the anger will grow and the anger will become inappropriate. If the anger grows too great, it can be harmful. The responsible thing is to respond to it now. Not, don't wait. But what many of the experts are doing is saying, oh, it'll go away. Prices will go up and people won't be angry anymore. And I think the more likely scenario is that over the coming years, prices will go down. It may go up for a time, but then ultimately will go down again in another crash. And this next crash, the anger is going to be much greater than what we're seeing today. So I think it's irresponsible to ignore the anger and not to respond to it. But it's the soft, easy way to ignore it. 25, do you think that's fair, the anger? Do you think that's fair? Scott would say no, I believe. 26, do you think there should be more criticism of the experts? I think Scott would say no. Isn't that like all of us, you know? The journalists think the journalists are great. The experts think the experts are great. The politicians think the politicians are great. The carpenters think carpenters are great. 27, do you think this is a self-satisfied club? Well, that's sort of a loaded question, Rob. I think Scott would say no. I think it is. I mean, I don't want to be overly harsh, but I do think it's a self-satisfied club. I think investing experts as a class are too complacent, not questing enough. They're self-satisfied. They think they've got it figured out. They think they're good people. They think they're smart people, and they are. They think they're good people, and they are. But they're too self-satisfied. And part of the job is to question your own thinking. And there's just not enough of that in this field. You know, in my opinion. 28. Are emotional factors given enough consideration in investing analysis? Scott would say no to that, I believe. I think he would acknowledge that there's too much focus on the numbers and not enough on the emotional questions. To his credit, he would say that, I think. 29. Is this a huge problem? I answered that one no. I think Scott likes his numbers. See, so much of this is the experts can acknowledge on a surface level the problems. But what they don't acknowledge is the gravity. So if you say to him, Scott, should we be talking about investor emotions? He says, oh, yes, 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 good idea. Much needed, much needed. Do you think it's a huge problem that we don't do this today? No, advice is pretty good. You know, that's the attitude. And see, that's self-satisfied. Why not check it out? Why not go to a discussion board and find out just how big a problem is the emotional problem? I have an article at my website where I do that. What was it called? Something like Stock Panic Up Close and Personal, something like that. And it's a long article, and I think it was 14,000 words, but I discuss how investor emotion is such a problem using what I've learned by participating at discussion boards. I don't think Scott Burns would be willing to sit through the 14,000 words reading them. But I think it would be of great benefit if he did so. I think it would add a lot because he's very strong on the number side. I don't think he's nearly as strong on the emotion side. Question 30. Is investing only numbers and facts and studies and other hard stuff? Scott would say no. That's just another version of the question above. Question 31. Is it primarily numbers and facts and studies? Yes. I think he would say yes, and I think he's wrong. I think it's 70% emotional. Question 32. Do you think we will see an economic depression? I think Scott would say no. Now, I also would say no, but I put the odds at about 30%. My guess is that Scott would put the odds less than that. My guess is he would put the odds between 5% and 10%, probably closer to 5%. I would say 30%. Question 33, is this a crisis? He would say yes to that. You know, people will acknowledge we're in a crisis, but then, the follow-up is, what does crisis mean? To me, crisis means there's a risk of an economic depression. That's why a significant risk of an economic depression, not a 5% chance, a 30% chance. That's what I mean when I use the word crisis. But see, these words aren't defined. So a lot of people use the word crisis, but it doesn't signify the same thing when they do it as it does when someone else says it. Question 34. Should most investors be in stocks today? Yes, Scott Burns would say. I don't really believe that. I in a sense, I do. I believe the typical investor should be at about 50% stocks. However, I also say that those who have been investing passively and who took a big hit in the passive investing stock crash should probably be out of stocks until they're able to get their emotions under control. So I give sort of a two-sided answer to that one. There's the logical answer, which the numbers say you should be in stocks. And there's the emotional answer, which says if you've already taken a huge hit, you can't emotionally bear the thought of another 50% loss. And that's a reality today. It's a real risk. So you just can't be in stocks until you develop confidence in a different approach, in a different model. Question 35. Have you made mistakes? I think Scott is an honest enough person. He would say yes to that. He's obviously made mistakes, and I think he's able to acknowledge that. Question 36, fundamental mistakes? There, I think he'd say no. I think he's made a fundamental mistake in endorsing passive investing. Question 37, is it possible that most of your investing advice is wrong? I think Scott would say no. You know what I think. Question 38. Is Rob Arnott exaggerating when he says that the conventional advice of recent decades is, quote, myth and urban legend? Scott would say yes. Scott, I'm sure, respects Rob Arnott, but I think when he sees the phrase myth and urban legend, his eyes just pass right over it. Doesn't want to acknowledge how strong a statement Rob Arnott is making. That one statement, in my view, tells us we need to have a national debate on investing, because all of us are invested in stocks. I mean, not every single person, but most middle-class workers are trying to plan for retirement, and we're charged today with financing our own retirements by investing in stocks, and we've got a leading figure in the field saying that the conventional investing advice is myth and urban legend. If it's myth and urban legend, we need to have a national debate and figure out what we're doing. I think that Scott would be obligated to persuade himself, or at least he would feel obligated to persuade himself that that's an exaggeration. I don't think it's an exaggeration, but I think Scott believes that. Question 39, can Shiller be reconciled with Bogle? A similar question. I think Scott Burns would say yes. I don't think there's any way that Robert Shiller's arguments in his book Irrational Exuberance can be reconciled with John Bogle's promotion of passive investing. Cannot be. Shiller is arguing that valuations affect long-term returns, and he looks at the historical data to show the extent to which this is true. And he shows over and over again how emotional investing is. And John Bogle says you don't need to change your stock allocation, and John Bogle essentially believes in the efficient market theory, which is premised on the idea that investing is a strictly rational endeavor, that everyone is trying to maximize his or her return. If only it were true. Shiller cannot be reconciled with Bogle. But if they can't be reconciled, the job of an investing journalist is to be discussing the conflict and ultimately resolving it. Scott Burns' job as a columnist is to explore where Shiller and Bogle, both major figures, of course, where they differ, and then come down on one side or the other. And I would say that he has skirted the issue. Not just Scott. Lots of people have done this. They write about Shiller's book. They say Shiller's brilliant. And then Monday morning, they're right back to promoting Bogle's ideas as if nothing had happened. And something did happen. Like the subtitle of Shiller's book says, Shiller revolutionized our understanding of how stock investing works. And we better get to the point of acknowledging that that's so. And the only way that I know it's going to happen is with a national debate on the failings of the passive investing model. The 39 was, can Shiller be reconciled with Bogle? And I said that Scott would say yes. 40 is, have you figured out how? Have you figured out how they can be reconciled? The answer to that one is no, if he were being honest, if he were hooked up to a lie detector. He would have to acknowledge that he thinks they can be reconciled on some level of consciousness, but he has no idea how. None. I'd love to see him try to reconcile them. Question 41. Is it necessary to dumb down investing findings when reporting them to your readers? I think Scott would say yes. I discussed that above. The experts rationalize dumbing stuff down to us. Question 42. Does the public place confidence in claims of science? He would say yes. Question 43. Is it still science if it is dumbed down? I think he would say yes. I don't think it's science anymore. When you dumb it down to the extent that it's been dumbed down in the presentation of passive investing, it's not science. Science is a quest for truth. Science is when you discover inaccuracies or conflicts, you explore them. You learn from them. Passive investing says ignore them. Sweep them under the rug. That's not science. It's anti-science. It's a betrayal of your starting premise that science matters. But I don't think he can accept that. I don't think any passive investing advocate can accept that. Question 44. Do you take what the public wants to hear into consideration when writing your columns? I think he would acknowledge yes, because as I mentioned above, he reported himself that the media does not tell us what we need to hear. The media tells us what we want to hear, which which at a time of insane stock prices, we want to hear that stocks are good, even if it's going to cause us to lose our retirement money. That's what we want to hear. It's not good for us to hear that, but that's what we want to hear. And the experts and the financial journalists have persuaded themselves that they're doing the right thing and just telling us what we want to hear. It's marketing. It's not reporting. It's marketing, telling people what they want to hear. But marketing has become so common in our society that we don't even blink anymore. We justify it. We say, hey, people like my column. If they like it, it must be good. I dispute that. Sometimes the sign of your column being a good column is if people don't like it, if people are a little upset with it. Because you have obligations other than, you know, selling widgets. You have obligations other than bringing eyeballs to the page. You have an obligation to the truth. Is that an old-fashioned idea? Is that an old-fashioned notion of journalistic integrity? I hope not. I hope it's, what is it? Fantasy girls and fantasy worlds and Disney girls are coming back. I hope. Question 45. Is that terribly wrong? This is referring to the, do you take what the public wants to hear into consideration? And I said he would say yes. And question 45 is that terribly wrong? I think he would say no. Scott doesn't believe in fantasy worlds and Disney girls like Rob Bennett does. Question 46, is that somewhat wrong? I think that he would say yes. I think he'd acknowledge it's somewhat wrong. He just doesn't feel as strongly about it as I do. And to some extent, that's just a difference of opinion. To some extent, that's a difference of opinion. Different people have different takes, you know. We're not all the same. And we shouldn't be. You know, there's a reason, you know, why God mixed us all together in this stew we're in. There's a reason. We need to have Scott Burns's, and we need to have Rob Bennett's, and we need to have, you know, John Graney's, and we need to have John Bogle's, and we need to have Robert Schiller's, and so forth and so on. Question 47. Are we headed for a revolution? Now, by revolution, I mean Rob Arnott has said we're going to see a revolution in investing advice. Are we headed for a revolution? I think Scott Burns would say no. I think Rob Arnott is right on. I think we are headed for a revolution. The passive investing model is so dogmatic and so wrong and so dangerous that it's going to lead to a breakdown. It's already led to a breakdown of the stock market. I believe it's going to lead to a breakdown, unless it's fixed, of our economic system and possibly our political system. I mean, that sounds like an absurd overstatement. But if we head into an economic depression, our political system is going to be under question. So I think the stakes here are very high. We cannot encourage middle-class investors to invest in stocks and not tell them the ABCs of stock investing. It's just so irresponsible. There just aren't words to describe it. We just can't do it. But the way the experts look at it is we can't not do it. If we've done it for 30 years, we can't ever change. Because that would mean saying those words, I was wrong. And if you say I was wrong in this field, you're not considered to be an expert. You lose all your trappings of power. So they would say we can't, and so we've got an irresistible force against an unmovable object, and it's going to be a showdown. It's going to be a revolution. I hope that the revolution comes soon enough to save our economy from going over a cliff. That's all. Question 48. Does it all add up? I think you know what I mean by that. I think Scott would say no. It doesn't all add up. He would acknowledge that much. Question 49. Are today's planners anxious about the state of affairs? I think the answer is yes. Michael Kitts has told me that a lot of financial planners are having second thoughts about having advocated passive investing for so long. And I think Scott has surely spoken to some. Question 50. Do you do your best? I think Scott could answer yes to that question, and the lie detector would back him up. Question 51. Is accuracy in numbers important? Yes. How else could he answer? It's an idiotic question in a way. If it were any other field, that would be an idiotic question. In investo world, you got to ask it. But in any other field, that's an idiotic question. Question 52, do you always insist on absolute accuracy? I think if he had a lie detector attached, Scott would have to acknowledge no, he does not. Scott knows that the numbers... Scott, if he doesn't know that the numbers in the old school safe adroit studies are wrong, he certainly knows that there are strong arguments that they are wrong. He knows that because he said it. He's written a column about the new school. So he knows there are problems, and he's not insisting on absolute accuracy. When he wrote his column pointing out that the new school says you have to subtract, that the safe withdrawal rate at the top of the bubble was only 2%, not 4%, Scott didn't say that he agreed with that. He didn't even endorse the new school. He just sort of threw it out there. Hey, there's these studies I've been telling you about for years now that say the safe withdrawal rate's always 4%, and there's a new school that says it's now 2%, and I'm not even taking a position. Well, if you're not taking a position, you're implicitly saying it doesn't matter that the old school studies are 2 full percentage points off the mark. It doesn't matter. In no other field of endeavor would anyone, any sane person, say it doesn't matter. If we were talking about a flaw in a car that was going to cause millions of car accidents, it would be universal. There would not be one soul who would say that's acceptable. But in investing, where our retirements are what's at stake, hey, you know, another day, another dollar. It's all marketing. And the reason, of course, why it's different is that the owners of the flawed product, passive investing is the flawed product, the car that's going to explode, the owners of the flawed product want to hear that the product is not flawed. When we go with excessively high stock allocations, we become part of the problem because we're emotionally invested in all the double talk. We love it. We love it. That's the problem. That's why the standards of integrity in Investo world are very, very different from what they are in any other field that I know of. Because the people who are hurt by the lack of integrity, and it is a lack of integrity if you don't report numbers accurately, the people who are hurt want to be told funny numbers. And the other factor is the reward for giving the funny numbers is so much larger. You know, there was a great quote that I read in the last podcast where I talked about a guy at Bogleheads that said he compared who was he comparing? He's comparing something with used car salesmen, and he said the difference is the used car salesmen know they're lying. I don't think he was comparing investing experts. I don't remember what he was comparing. But that's essentially what's going on here. The investing experts are giving wrong numbers, but they don't think of it as lying because they've absorbed this culture where you just throw out numbers for marketing purposes and you call it science. And it's standard course of business. It's not like there's one group doing it and nobody else does it. It's just standard practice. It's, you know, standard industry practice is what they would call it. And, you know, and if you're in law school, there's a thing called standard industry practice, which is a sign that you're not engaged in fraud. Well, in investing, they do this all the time. You have to do it all the time because if you didn't do it, the passive investing model would crash to the ground. You couldn't keep it afloat. And all the people buying the product, well, not all of them, but 90% of the people buying the product want to keep passive investing afloat because it's not just the experts who got it wrong. It's each and every one of us who bought stocks from 1995 to 2008. And we all advocated to our friends. We told our friends to buy stocks. We told our neighbors to buy stocks. We reassured our spouses that we were doing the right thing. And if the experts were to now say they got it all wrong, they'd be saying we got it all wrong too. It wouldn't be a happy day. Now, it would lead to a happy day. If we can make that change, we can change the history of investing. We can make back all the money we lost in the crash. Most of us can. Depends on your age. But if you've got 30 years left, and, you know, I don't know what the average life expectancy is today, but what, maybe 75, something like that, maybe 80? So if it's 80 and you're 50, you've got 30 years. So anybody under 50 can make it all back. if they make the switch to rational. But that doesn't mean it's going to come, you know, that the instant reaction is going to be praise for the people who come forward with this. The instant reaction is going to be anger. There is going to be anger. I'm not going to lie about that. But I think if it came out today, the anger would be short-lived. People would get so excited about the positive side that the anger would fade and be replaced by joy and excitement and learning and industry. But that's where it stands. This was a little bit of a fun exercise. It wasn't intended to be taken totally seriously, because obviously I can't know what Scott would answer to these questions. I'm really telling you what Rob Bennett thinks Scott would answer. What Rob Bennett, not so much what he would answer, but what he really believes. That's why I have the lie detector part. I'm trying to say what he really thinks inside his head. And I think he knows there's problems, but he does not want to acknowledge how deep they are or how serious they are. And I think he's got lots of good company. And I think when people ask me, how are stocks going to do? That's what I look for. I look for those words, I was sorry. I mean, I was wrong. Or I'm not sure. You know, I'll settle for I'm not sure. But when Scott Burns and, you know, 500 other investing experts come out with a statement, I'm not sure or I was wrong, I will feel greatly relieved. And I would recommend on that day to start buying stocks heavily, because that means we're on the way up again. That means we're rebuilding. That means the passive investing era has come to an end, and all the misery and darkness and poverty has come to an end. And word games and deception and intimidation has come to an end. And we can start rebuilding. We can start healing. We can start learning. We can start having fun again. So that's what I look for. So the reason, you know, this is an investing question. Don't think I'm just, you know, as I say, it's a little playful exercise, but I don't think there's something important at the heart of this. These are it's when Scott Burns is turning this stuff over in his head, there's going to come a day if we have another crash, which I think is likely, but it's not certain. But if we do, the pressure on Scott, and as I say, 500 others, is going to be intense to finally acknowledge the realities that they're trying to hide from today. And if they do that, it's going to have an effect. The question is it going to happen soon enough that the effect will be positive, or will it happen after so much economic destruction has been done that we can't rebuild? Well, if we can't rebuild, there's nothing I can say to help anybody. So it's all sort of pointless. My hope is that we will do it when there is time to rebuild. And I think the responsibility of all responsible people today is to do all they can to make it happen a little sooner. And to put stuff in place, put materials in place so that when it does happen, we can take advantage. That's what I try to do by creating the calculators and the articles and the podcast at the website. So that when that day comes, you know, we're ready to go. We're ready to hit the ground running. We don't have to say, oh, how does stock investing really work? We have all we'd have is elementary takes, but at least we'll have a starting point. And that's where the debate can start. And then all these other smart people, obviously, including Scott Burns, can get into the act at that point and make wonderful contributions based on a model that makes sense. Think of the possibilities, friends and neighbors. Give me an email if you have some thoughts. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.